Africa already being punished economically for the African National Congress's support for Russia. Here to tell us is the Democratic Alliance's Shadow Finance Minister, Dr. Dion George. Welcome, Doctor.
Good morning. Thanks very much for inviting me. I think the simple answer to that question is yes. We are already being punished for the ANC's position on Russia. Now, if we just roll back slightly, is that the ANC has been claiming for a very long time that it is non-aligned. And there is no problem with that. Many countries in the world are non-aligned. So, for example, they work very well with Russia, China, and the USA without problem, because that's their sovereign right to do. But the problem with South Africa is that we say one thing and then do another. And that is really causing the problem. So the ANC has been saying, ever since they came to government almost 30 years ago, that they're non-aligned. And to a degree, they have been behaving in a non-aligned way for a while. But they're no longer non-aligned. As much as the ANC says that it is taking this non-aligned position and it wants to foster peace in Ukraine, etc., that is not so. The ANC is very clearly chosen to align with Russia. And that is very, very problematic. We've seen how they've been voting in the United Nations. We've also seen the sale or contribution of weapons to Russia from South Africa by the Lady R. That is not the behavior of a non-aligned country. That is the behavior of a country that's picked a side. So the ANC is pro-Russia, and that is causing great amount of unhappiness amongst our Western allies, obviously, specifically the United States, because the situation in Ukraine is causing a global catastrophe, frankly, right? Security and economically. So with South Africa fraternizing with Russia, also with Putin possibly coming in August, that is not found favor by Congress in the United States. Now, they are the people who will decide whether to renew AGOA, which is the special trade agreement that we have with the U.S. It's not reciprocal. It gives enormous benefits to South Africa and the region. And the U.S. Congress is basically asking itself the question as well, when it comes up for renewal in 2025, why on earth should we continue giving special a deal to South Africa when it's behaving in this way? So that is a very real threat. So we did recently go to Washington. John Steenhuisen, Siwewe Chwarube, and myself, we went to Washington and we had engagements over there. And that was the initial conversation that we started, because obviously the DA's position is that we do not want AGOA to be removed or South Africa to be carved out of AGOA, because it's going to really hurt our economy and we have no space in our economy for that. In fact, our economy is in very serious trouble. So that's the one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that what you call silent sanctions that have started happening is that institutions and investors abroad are now thinking about South Africa and wondering whether they want to invest in a country that, firstly, our economic fundamentals are so weak that whether you're going to get a return or not is already of concern. But then when you're actively behaving in an unacceptable way, then business and investors start saying, well, maybe I'd rather go to another jurisdiction, another developing economy where I don't have that problem. I don't have the moral problem of it supporting a country that's at war in Europe, that caused the war, and is killing a significant amount of people. We don't want blood on our hands. And so South Africa, by its association, is thrown into that pot. And we're seeing more and more of it. Also, what does not help is the fact that Eskom is hopelessly bankrupt. It has borrowed money from everywhere it can possibly borrow money, including international markets. And there's concern now that is Eskom going to actually be able to pay us back? Because it can't. It has run out of money. The South African government has now taken over the debt, or part of it, $254 billion of it. But the question is, well, will they actually be able to pay that? Because how viable is the South African economic situation? And it isn't good. So yes, the quick answer to that is that we're already being punished. And if we carry on going down this road, we're going to get punished a lot more. We saw what happened to the rand when the repo rate went up the other day. What's supposed to have happened is the rand was supposed to have at least stayed where it was or appreciated. It did not do that. It carried on depreciating. So the interest rates made no difference whatsoever. That is very problematic because that tells you that monetary policy is no longer effective. And it's no longer effective because government has chosen the wrong fiscal policies and it has chosen the wrong political stance in terms of Russia and positioning itself as not non-aligned.
If you were in a position to devise a strategy to protect the economy from the fallout over South Africa's stance on Russia, what would you do?
Well, I think the first thing that I would do is to reiterate the fact you don't actually have to be pro-West. What you got to do is be non-aligned. So what the very first thing to do would be to say, well, actually, we are non-aligned, but then behave in a non-aligned way. So, for example, withdraw the invitation to Vladimir Putin. Do not allow him to come to South Africa. Send the signals that we want to. If South Africa is going to play the so-called peaceful role with the African Union, well, then play that. But then don't behave as if you're supporting. So first thing is to demonstrate through actions that we are actually not pro-Russia, that we are then non-aligned. Ideally, we could say we would be pro the fact that we don't support Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine and that we're on the side of Ukraine. We could go that way and it would be beneficial for South Africa. But even if we just stopped at behaving in a non-aligned way, that would go a long way. Because I think people understand the complexities of small economies such as ourselves. So that is the first thing that I would do. The next thing that I would do is to actually start working on sentiment. And that sentiment is crucial. So, for example, do at least one or two important things that will send a signal that South Africa's economy is not going to go over the abyss, that we actually do have enough time to stop the problem from getting bigger. And that would mean, for example, if you look at the biggest problem we have in our economy at this very second, other than the fact that our government is choosing the wrong policies and choosing the wrong allies, is Eskom. Eskom is going to destroy our economy if we allow it to completely disintegrate, because that is what is happening. It is not viable. Now, government has said for a long time that it would unbundle Eskom. Now, all they have to do then is to take one step in the right direction. In fact, that is what I said to the minister the last time I saw him. I said, do one thing, positive thing. Now, that positive thing can go towards unbundling Eskom, starting to inject more privately procured energy into the grid and then invest in the grid. Now, what we need approximately is 200 billion rand for the grid so that it can cope with renewables. That is a lot of money. But if you talk to the experts, if you had 40 billion rand and injected 40 billion in the first instance, that could actually take us a reasonable way towards sorting out the problem. Also, there's been very significant technological advancements in using older infrastructure for newer renewable energy. That's continually happening, but Eskom is falling behind because it just isn't innovating. It is not doing anything, frankly. It's just battling to keep a little bit of energy in the grid. And that is the issue. So by doing little things, and the first little thing, as I said, costs nothing, is to just articulate the right thing. Because markets work on sentiment. And of course, then you have to deliver. But when you're talking the wrong way or doing things that indicate you're in the wrong place, the markets are watching. That is what's going on. So if you say the right thing, if you start marching in the right direction, you then do start to change sentiment, because that rolls very rapidly. Because as we know, I mean, when we were in Washington and all over, we often, as the DEA, do speak to foreign embassies, etc. We have never been more popular, for the simple reason is that there is a great expectation that something is going to happen next year, that South Africa is going to have a coalition government, for example, that the ANC will fall below 50. And what does that look like? Because we've never been here before. So there's this massive anticipation. And when there's this massive anticipation, also, people are can be quite innovative and think, well, let me take a lot of risk. But others think, well, I actually don't want to do that because the risk is too high. And that is another factor, if we want to attract investment, that the concern could be, well, what is South Africa going to look like after next year? Is it going to look even worse than it does now? Because that is, in fact, possible. It's possible for our economy to get worse. But it's also, on the flip side, possible for it to get a lot better. And by doing just a couple of things, you can. And another one big thing that could happen immediately is, for example, if government just started getting out of the way of economic development, because everybody forgets that you can, in fact, grow an economy such as ours. We have a large informal sector. We have an entrepreneurial population. You can actually tap into that. But government needs to get out the way, because it's positioned itself at the center of our economy. It's got all these state-owned enterprises, almost all of which are bankrupt. Throwing money into them is not going to change anything. And throwing billions of rands into talking about a jobs fund, etc., that's doing nothing, it's not going anywhere. So we need those structural changes. And the problem is that the ANC is unable to change that. It's unable to actually maneuver because it is stuck. And that is the problem. So if you do a few important interventions, free up the labor market, for example, it is very much possible that we can start lifting our economy off its knees. Because if we do not do that, I mean, it doesn't help anybody to be hopelessly negative about a situation. There is no point in that. But if you look at the fundamentals of our country, we're in very significant trouble. Our projection, the minister's projection in February on the budget, was that our economy was going to grow. It was around 1.5% over the next 3 years. Now, that's very tepid. But if we carry on going this way, there's no way we're going to get that. And that big problem means that when we see the medium-term budget policy statement in October, we might very well have to see a reduction in the revenue projection. And if you have to do that, that means that there's even less money than articulated in the budget in February. And then when we look at the adjustment in October, all the numbers will have to be adjusted downward, which means there'll be less money available for service delivery. And so what happens is you start crowding out service delivery. And also one very big thing that I've said several times is that the provision for the social relief of distress grant is not there from the next financial year. There is no money on that line. I have asked the minister about that in the House and elsewhere. Where is the money for that? Well, the ANC's response is that they are building or working on a new social security net model. Now, where is that model? It's already May. Are we going to see it in October? And then where is that money going to come from if you have to reduce the revenue numbers downward? And that is a ticking time bomb, because as much as it's a small amount of money in the big scheme of things, we're looking about 35 to 40 billion rand, which in the bigger scheme isn't a fundamentally massive number, given the size of our economy potentially. But the impact it makes on everybody's life does, in fact, matter. So, for example, when I saw the IMF in our most recent engagement, we spoke about why is it that South Africa hasn't had a revolution or more social unrest, because people are battling. And the conclusion that they came to following our discussion also is that, yes, we have some institutions that are still, in fact, working. unlike if you look north in Africa, that isn't so. But we do have some institutions in South Africa that are working. We also have got the social security net, although it's small. It's helping people eke out an existence. Now, when you remove that, or when you can't pay for that, then what does that actually mean? Because the DA's view obviously is we need to grow the economy, because then you lift all ships. And then you need to make sure that you provide the basic services, electricity being one of them, and now water also. The reason why we've got the water crisis is because we've got the energy crisis, because water can't get pumped, it's causing problems with sewage, etc. So the whole ecosystem starts to not work. This morning, for example, if you see what happened in Eswatini, they haven't got any snake venom. The reason for that is because South Africa can't supply it, because the suppliers can't make it, because the electricity is off. And so therefore, there is that. So what happens is, if you look at the ecosystem around South Africa and in our economy, when one thing starts to fall over, then you have a domino effect. And then, for example, if you look at national health insurance, if you have national health insurance, which we can't afford anyway, but if you start to damage the healthcare system, then you start driving more and more people out of the economy, because they emigrate, they leave, they take the skills, they go where they can. And so you have a shrinking pot of skill as well. So that is what government doesn't understand properly, is that everything impacts on everything. And then when one little domino starts to go, then others fall. But the opposite is then also true. If you then recognize where they are, if you take interventions in the places that you can make a difference, you can, in fact, stop that from happening, and you can start rebuilding the other way. And that's what we have to do. I mean, the DA's alternative budget that we every year we issue that before the national budget, is we make it very clear that what's missing in this pie is the growth of the economy. Government's fixated on redistributing it, putting in crazy black economic empowerment rules that don't work, that won't ever work, etc. It makes no sense. Instead of fixating on a shrinking pie and cutting up a smaller cake, focus on growing it. That is what we need to do. And so that is the focus. And when I speak to the minister, we do talk about growth. We don't share the same view, obviously, and I won't go into detail. But the fact of the matter is that we have a different way of wanting to grow the economy.
Dr. May, I take you back to Washington. Tell us more about the great excitement there at the prospect of a coalition government in South Africa next year.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, you don't make coalitions before elections, obviously, because, I mean, obviously the DA has the Moonshot Pact, but that's not a coalition. That is basically the idea of a pact of parties who are compatible with us, etc., that can in fact form a new government coalition. But the crucial thing is how many votes you get at an election. So what happens before the election is you don't make an agreement as such. Of course, you talk, etc., but then you see how many piles of chips you have on the table after the election. So everybody, the ANC gets a pile, the DA gets a pile, the EFF gets a pile, and other people get piles. We don't know what the piles will look like. But what is the sort of buzz of Washington was my experience, was that there is this anticipation that something is going to change, and also that something needs to change. Because what for me was an enormously big eye-opener was the view very clearly, and we certainly pushed that message too, and it landed very well. The ANC is not South Africa. There is, in fact, another voice and other voices. And there is another voice, and that's the DA, and we are the opposition, and we are viable because we are large, and it matters what size you are in this game. So the excitement in Washington is that, yes, the ANC is no longer the ANC that they remember from Nelson Mandela, etc., when it was the paragon of virtue, it was in the forefront of human rights, etc. Although it was non-aligned, it was still doing that. And then they've drifted so far away that now the ANC has gone rogue. We've had the state capture. We've had the wrong alignment now internationally. So there's no sympathy, none. And that was why we were talking about AGOA, because we were saying, look, if you take AGOA away, it's like sanctions. And then what happens is government, actually, they don't suffer because, you know, there'll be something, they'll sort themselves out. It's the ordinary South Africans that are already battling to put food on their table that will suffer. So just remember what your target is, in fact. So if you want to hurt the government, don't do it that way. Do it another way. So that was our very clear message. Also, our very clear message was that we will do everything possible to get as much as we can at the ballot box so that we can come to a negotiation with as much as possible on the table, because it's the will of the people. The people vote and their voice must be heard. So if the DA gets a nice big pile of chips, we then have got a much stronger hand to negotiate a coalition or influence the future, because that's what needs to happen. So what is important for people to realize, and sometimes people don't, is there's a direct correlation between how you vote and the life that you end up living. It matters. Some countries it doesn't. But here in South Africa, as a growing and evolving democracy, it matters. Your government matters enormously. And that's the thing. So what was also exciting for us was the reception that we received. We really received a warm and welcoming reception from everybody. We did see the State Department. We saw players in the Senate and the House. We had really nice, clear conversations about what is the position of the DA in terms of values, because fact is that the DA is very much aligned with the values of freedom, democracy, the rule of law, a market economy with a social conscience, of course. But those values are things that it's in our DNA. We don't have to make it up because it is in fact there. And that makes us very compatible, frankly, with countries who also love and cherish freedom and democracy and the rule of law. And so when we were in Washington, it was very clear that when you mention the word, of course, freedom and democracy and the rule of law, that resonates because that is the value that is a similar value. So that's what we're actually fighting for in South Africa now. Yes, it's the economy, and yes, it's, you know, the lives of individuals, etc. But it is, in fact, the basic value of the individual freedom to choose your destiny and to become everything that you're capable of becoming. Because if your government starts to destroy the environment and breaks the economy, you can't have that. So the fundamental freedom becomes impossible. And that is the core of what the fight in South Africa is actually about. So there's so much at stake. That is why we will work tirelessly, firstly, to have policies, coherent policies, which we have. We have a social justice policy, which focuses on lifting the tide for everybody based on the United Nations sustainable development goals, because we believe that poverty is a proxy for poverty, not race as a proxy for poverty. What you need to focus on is actually the people who are in poverty and then uplift that way. The vast majority would, of course, be Black South Africans. But the fact of the matter is you can't fixate on race forever, because we will get nowhere. And that's a fundamental thing. So the DA has got a very sophisticated sweep of policies. We're working on them more, honing them up, because that is our offer to the electorate in the election next year.
Dr. May I briefly take you from the country's finances to the African National Congress party's finances? I see a written execution has been issued to attach assets belonging to the party to settle an unpaid 102 million rand bill for election banners.
Yes.
What is the situation with the party's finances? Do you know?
Well, I'm certainly no expert on the detail of the ANC's finances, but certainly from the outside, and also as the federal finance chairperson of my own party, so I know party finances. I mean, it's not easy to run a party's finances. It is complex. You've got various income streams, etc., and it isn't the easiest thing, and elections are extremely expensive. Democracy costs a lot of money. So I understand the complexity. Now, my take on the thing is, what I think happened is that Well, firstly, if you're paying 102 million rand for poster banners, I mean, I don't know what these things look like, but it certainly seems that it's, you know, it's not small change, you know. I mean, the DA uses poster boards. We don't use those kind of banners, so maybe the pricing is significantly worse. But clearly, somewhere in the ANC, it seems, there was a lack of controls because somebody did agree to pay for this, but then somebody else said, no, we're not agreeing. So clearly, the management of the party, it maybe is very much like the ANC runs the country, not very well. But I think also the Political Party Funding Act was a big contributor also because it changed fundamentally the rules of engagement, basically, on funding a party. So on the one hand, it reduced or changed the formula for the statutory income that comes from government. Now, the DA was also impacted because what happened was, well, I certainly did projections before the act was implemented and we knew the formula was going to change. And so we need to make some changes to the party because, you know, you've got to pay your overheads. So we forecast and that number came down. So the DA got less money from government after the act and so did the ANC. But the ANC, much bigger than the DA, had a much harder hit from that. So I think that that was the one part of the problem, is that the income suddenly changed. They didn't do the projection properly. And then they were in a situation where they actually couldn't pay their salaries. And I think they still can't. So that's the one part of the problem. The other thing is that the Political Party Funding Act, which the DA actually did not support, although we never break the law because we're a party of the rule of law, we do comply with it. The letter of the law, we comply. But there's caps every year for how much maximum you can get, and you have to disclose over 100,000, which we do. Now, the problem I think the ANC had is that the Act said that state-owned enterprises can no longer give money to political parties. We never got any from state-owned enterprises, but I think the ANC may have. Now, if that income stream dried up, maybe also because the state-owned enterprises are bankrupt, so they can't actually give money anyway. So that was an income stream that stopped running. And then, of course, with the disclosures, if you are in fact going to disclose, and if, for example, business, as was always speculated, was giving the ANC a large amount of money, suddenly they would feel less likely and a little reluctant to do that because it would be disclosed. So that's one theory of what happened in that big amount of money. But also, having to disclose the source of your income, that could become embarrassing if you have a problem with where it's coming from. So I think it's a combination of bad management and a combination of the environment that we're in. Also, frankly, I think there is also bets out. The ANC is no longer the hegemon anymore. It's actually becoming a weak, much weaker party, a more rural party. In the urban areas, it's losing support. So maybe backers would think, well, do I want a backless horse? I don't know. So it's, I mean, you know, I certainly don't glow with joy when I see other people's problems. But I certainly don't envy them with that problem because it's not easy to fix. Definitely is not. So I think it looks like they're in big trouble because if the court rules and they haven't settled 102 million, for example, and somebody arrives at Luthuli House and wants to take the stuff, I mean, that's a lot of money. There's no way the furniture there or the vehicles that might be parked in the garage are worth that. So what? You're going to have to force a sale of Luthuli House? We've never seen a political party actually go bankrupt before. So this could be the first time, because it is in fact possible. It is also possible...
Because quite recently...
Yes.
Sorry, quite recently there was a 102 million rand unpaid SARS bill. I don't know.
Yes, there's unpaid SARS bills, there's unpaid salary bills, there's unpaid pension funds, unpaid medical aid. I believe a total fiasco, but I don't know the detail of their finances. But what I can say is that what we're reading, if that's what we're reading, then what's under the surface that we aren't reading? So it's a horrible situation for them, I am sure.
Well, back to the country's finances, but it's not all doom and gloom, you see.
No, I don't think so. Look, we are in a very difficult space. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Our revenue is under pressure. Government spends all on the wrong things, etc. But I do think that there are some things, lights at the end of the tunnel. Firstly, there is the prospect of a political improvement, which improves the sentiment. That's the one thing. The other thing is that if you do make incremental changes in the right places, you can, in fact, start to turn the problem around. So, for example, just if the state-owned enterprises, for example, were shut down and stopped throwing money at them, that would already make a huge, big difference. If we, for example, started looking at the public service and it's overbloated and saying, well, okay, how do we streamline it a bit? So take a bit of pressure off the balance sheet. And then, crucially, growth, growth, growth. That's what you want. Get government out the way. Get rid of the red tape. Improve the labor regime. And then let entrepreneurs and people that want to run in the economy run. Just get out the way and stop stealing. And if you do those few things, you've already got a better outcome. And then on top of that, then start attracting foreign investment, unlocking, because there's lots of money actually in South Africa that isn't invested because people are fearful. They don't believe they're going to get a return. But if you do that and then do the little interventions in Eskom that you can start moving in the right direction, the positive sentiment starts to lift the mood. It starts to lift entrepreneurs, etc. That is what is in fact possible. So I do not believe that it's all doom and gloom. It is difficult times and it's going to get tougher because monetary policy isn't working and government is not going to change its ways. But we do have an election, in fact. And to me, that is the most exciting thing because people can, in fact, make the changes that we need. And our country can be the great, rich country that it actually is.
Thank you, Doctor. That was the DA's Shadow Finance Minister, Dr. Dion George, speaking to BizNews.